everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are. It is October 8th, 2013, and it's pretty lovely here in New York. The air has got a little chill in it. It's happening. The seasons are changing, and we're now officially looking at fall, and I'm looking out the window, and the leaves are doing that beautiful color-changing thing, and I'm enjoying it. Well, what are we going to talk about today? You know we're always talking about food. And one of the things that I try and do on this show is connect the dots and help everyone think about our food, which is so essential to all of our lives, and how it connects to so many things, especially health, environment, and where our food comes from. And what do we think about it? I think we don't think enough about it, and that's one of the things that I do on this show is talk about food and try and stir up some interest on a lot of different topics that are related to food. Well, I think we're going to get to the core in this next half hour, and I want to bring on my first guest. Adrian Boutash is the author of Bless This Food, a well-known marketing and advertising professional. He studied history and culture of the world at Fordham University. He lives in Santa Barbara, California. And his website is adrianarts.com. Welcome to It's All About Food, Adrian.
Karen, thank you so much. Looking forward to our chat, and say hello to you, your staff, and your listeners.
Thank you. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes, you did, Karen.
Thank you. Good. I always want to make sure I get it right. You know, we live in such a global environment, and the letters don't give us enough information sometimes about how they want to be pronounced.
Right. No, my biggest problem with the name Adrian is I often get mail addressed to Mr. or Miss.
Oh, yeah.
So it comes with the territory.
Okay. Well, you know, and, well, I'm getting off tangents now, but there are some languages with the sir, with the titles that don't even suggest gender. So,
and true, true.
Yes, and doesn't matter. Anyway, let's talk about food. So this is a fascinating little book, Bless This Food, and I guess originally it came out in the 90s, and then you've had some reprinting since then?
Right. We now have just issued the paperback version, and the book is identical to the hardcover. Of course, it's less expensive, mm-hmm. and we're very happy about what's going on. And the book is surging forward. We have some other plans for the book. We've had some suggestions to make it into an ongoing radio show, part of which today is going to be an exemplar. So,
okay,
again, thank you for
idea.
Your interest.
Well, I always want to help do my part to make this world a better place. And one of the things that I see as a big issue, especially in the United States, is we have a huge disconnect with our food, where it comes from, how it's made, what's involved from the moment something that is going to be food becomes something, and all the manipulations before it gets to our plate.
Right.
And people, most people have no idea today, where it used to be such an integral part of everyday lives in early humanity, most of humanity up until recently. And I think it's to our detriment. And when
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so this book, I think, is a great tool to get us to start thinking about our food, and then it can open up so many conversations.
Well, I also salute you with your responsible eating and living program and the benefits of a plant-based diet, because as we look through, particularly in my book, the history of food always has celebrated plant-based foods, and particularly corn. There are many number of wonderful poems and blessings about corn and plant diet.
You know, I'm not a religious person. I'm an agnostic, maybe an atheist-leaning agnostic, but I respect everyone's beliefs, and there's a lot of rich history and culture in the variety of religions, and there are things that we can learn from all of them. And one prayer that I'm very familiar with is one that's in your book. It's on page 28, prayer 5. And at the end, it talks about the delicious fruits of the earth. And it's from the Essenes, which you write were probably strict vegetarians.
And
and it made me think about how many of the prayers really talk about the fruits or the vegetables or the bread. Most of the time they're talking about plant foods.
Well, indeed. One of the classics is in one of my classic blessings here. It's from a contemporary father, Father John Giuliani, and it's very short, four lines. Bless our hearts to hear in the breaking of bread the song of the universe. That's exquisite poetry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, now, you may know, I promote a plant-based diet. I'm a vegan, and I encourage everyone to eat more fruits and vegetables because there's so many benefits in doing so.
Right.
But I notice that in many prayers, like I just mentioned, they talk about fruits, vegetables, but I don't think we see very often, unless it's like a Native American Indian prayer or maybe an Indian prayer, where they really talk about the animal that we're taking.
The grievance of eating meat?
Yes.
Versus a plant-based diet?
Yes. How often do we see that in prayers?
I don't see much about meat. I see a lot about bread because bread is very sacred, and corn, which is, from the millennia, the primary food that people would grow and survive.
Mm-hmm. Well, there could be a number of reasons for that, and it could be, for a long time, humanity ate mostly from plants, and it's only recently that we're eating so many more animal products than we used to.
Right.
Or it could be this thing that I talk about all the time where we're really uncomfortable with taking the life of a sentient being and don't know how to deal with it, so we just avoid it.
Right. Well, for example, there's a wonderful blessing in here that comes from John Greenleaf Whittier, and it's the corn song. It's a prayer to a blessing about corn. If I may just read it, short line. Thank you. Heap high the farmer's wintry hoard, heap high the golden corn. No richer gift has autumn poured from out her lavish horn. But let the gold crop adorn the hills our fathers trod. Still let us, for his golden corn, send up our thanks to God. That's John Greenleaf Whittier, and that's from the 1800s. Wonderful, wonderful prayer.
I wish so many things, but I think if people took the time to bless their food, to think about their food, we'd be in a lot better place. If we even just talk about corn, and there's so many horrific things going on with corn today, where there used to be so many different varieties, and now we're monocropping here in the United States. We're really decreasing the diversity of the kinds of corn. And then, of course, there's genetically modified corn. And then we're making sweet sugar corn syrup out of corn rather than using it in its whole healthy form.
Yes. Understood. Well, that whole issue that you're so expert on, food and responsible eating and living and processing and the benefits of plant-based diet, is certainly commendable. I embrace it, and it's also something that's been a substance of society since we've been on this blessed earth.
I've dog-eared a lot of pages in this book because there were so many different ones that I really, really enjoyed. But when I first picked it up, I started thinking about my personal experience with prayers before a meal, saying grace, and it's something that we don't really do very much in our culture today. And the few times that I've been at someone's dinner table where they naturally either closed their eyes, held hands, quietly said words to themselves, or said something, often it was uncomfortable.
Well, that's a very, very interesting point. And one of the reasons I did this book was I wanted to be able to bring the child to the table. And if the child can read, you can give this book to a child, and suddenly, instead of being a quiet member at the table, they can be the shining star. And it's a wonderful experience. I've had lots of mail from people about the book and how the children have used it at the prayer before meal.
I'm reading Prayer 13, Teachings of the Buddha. If beings knew as I know the result of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would they allow the stain of meanness to obsess them and take root in their minds. Even if it were their last morsel, their last mouthful, they would not enjoy eating without having shared it if there were someone to share it with.
That's a lovely, lovely poem. And of course, it's a classic that goes back to the 5th century B.C. One of the things about this particular prayer is the Buddha is under the Bodhi tree. So if you think of the tree with its roots in heaven and its branches reaching down to earth with the fruit on the branches, what a wonderful piece of symbolism.
Okay, so you've had great experience with this book over the years, and how do we get this into more people's hands so that they can say some of these words, kind of reach back into history and forward into the future and realize our connection with earth, air, water, food, all life on earth, and have a better appreciation for it?
Well, of course, it comes through the book system, which today is now online, thank goodness, so people like you and your program can promulgate Bless This Food as a wonderful family book that includes children in the circle of experience at the dining table.
Part of the problem is we've got to get people to the table. People don't know where their kitchen is anymore, and they're not eating at the table very often.
That's, well, maybe the book can be the locus of interest. I'm particularly pleased also, for example, when you have a guest at a meal, to give the book to the guest, and suddenly, you know, they become the hero of that meal, which is a wonderful experience for any visitor.
Yeah, I don't say grace or bless my food, but I'm more motivated now to take a moment to think about it. Sometimes I like to, on this show and at other times, have people imagine or just think for a moment where their food comes, whatever it is.
Right.
It's almost a game, because today it is so complicated. Let's start with a seed and the person involved with planting the seed and all of the people that are involved in nurturing it and growing it and all the machines that are involved and who created those machines and the companies involved with the machines, the fertilizers. There's just so many different businesses now that are involved at every step, harvesting, shipping, packaging, traveling, and then going somewhere else and being transformed into something else and then having that packaged and shipped. And there's just so many people in one morsel of food.
Well, it's true. It certainly is a mechanized and vast industry. It's essential to get food to everyone. But I think one of the things that's lovely is the notion of harvest. Mm-hmm. And, for example, I have two prayers in the book, Prayer 125 and 141. And if I may, one is an English traditional hymn. Here, for the hay and the corn and the wheat that is reaped, for the labor well done and the barns that are heaped, for the sun and the dew and the sweet honeycomb, for the rose and the song and the harvest brought home, thanksgiving, thanksgiving. That's an English traditional hymn, and with Thanksgiving around the corner, it's probably one of the more lovely poems that covers a wide base. And may I do Nancy Bird Turner's prayer?
Mm-hmm.
This is Prayer 141. It's very short, but it's lovely. Thank God for home and crisp fair weather and loving hearts that meet together, and red ripe fruit and golden grain, and dear Thanksgiving, come again. I love Thanksgiving. It's my favorite meal and the favorite time of year.
Oh, absolutely.
So it partly motivated me for writing this book. If I may, I'll tell you just a brief reason how the book came to be.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. I was in Harvard Square one day doing work. This is back in 2008. And I decided, it was about this time of year, and I decided to want to find this book. So I went to the Widener Library, which is 21 universities connected around the world. Long story short, I typed in the query for this book. And it kept coming back, consult the Mahabharata, and all these obscure tracks that I'd heard about, but it was certainly wasn't going to read. And I had that ding-dong moment, I think I'll write this nice little book. And that's how it came about.
Well,
couldn't find what I wanted.
Well, I like a lot of different things about it, and one of the things we are having a problem with, I don't want to bring politics up, but obviously I'm bringing it up, we're having this thing right now with our two parties, Democrats and Republicans, and they can't agree. They can't come to the table and align on things that they agree upon. And this could be a step. And there's just so many references about sharing and that breaking bread concept. We all share so many essential things. And if we could acknowledge that and be grateful for that, I think we could move forward in so many ways.
Well, I agree. And that's words well said. The other thing that I like about some of the prayers I've found, and I'll read this one last one, is the companionship that comes from having friends at the table. Mm-hmm. And the prayer 57 is from Cheng Kung Sui. It's dated in 273 A.D. That's 1,700 years ago.
Wow.
But listen to this. It's wonderful. I sent out invitations to summon guests. I collected together all my friends, loud talk and ample feeling, discussion of philosophy, investigation of subtleties, tongues loosened and minds at one, hearts refreshed by discharge of emotion. That's, to me, it's so lovely. I mean, Chinese culture is the oldest living civilization in the world. And here they're talking about having friends over and good discussion. There's nothing about religion here. It's all about the friendship that comes with people over and by
and
what
tongues loosened. I love that line.
I'm sure by sake or something.
Mm-hmm.
But hearts refreshed by discharge of emotion. That notion is so beautiful. You know, you want to get your peace out and share it with the people at the table with you. But so the book is, a wide-ranging examination of why we should be thankful, how to bring children to the table and give them a role. And you realize that throughout history, blessing food and being thankful for survival has been an integral part of this wonderful existence on Earth.
Yes. I grew up on Long Island near Huntington, where Walt Whitman was born. So I especially enjoyed Prayer 77 by Walt Whitman.
Uh-huh.
How beautiful and perfect are the animals, how perfect the earth, and the minutest thing on it, what is called good, is perfect, and what is called bad is just as perfect. The vegetables and minerals are all perfect, and the imponderable fluids perfect. Slowly and surely they have passed on to this, and slowly and surely they pass on. I swear I think there is nothing but immortality.
That's lovely. I'm also from Long Island. I was raised in Hempstead and know Huntington well, and you're part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm in California, the land of the eternal sun here, and I actually do love it.
I call California the promised land.
Go west, young woman, go west.
Yes, well, I've lived there a number of times, and I may get back there again. But just like all places, things change.
Well, that's true. If I may say one other thing, in the book I have two sign blessings, hand signs, American Sign Language, including one for a child. And so that is another aspect of the book, the grace in sign language, ASL, American Sign Language, an adult grace and a child's grace. I've got a lot of mail over the years on how much fun it is to pass the book around and have a child do the blessings by American Sign Language, which is very easy to do.
I like that, and I think I'm going to bring this along to Thanksgiving, which I think it's many people's favorite holiday, and certainly in the vegetarian vegan community, it is the major holiday because we're so food obsessed in this community. And there are some symbols that come with the holiday that we choose to change for obvious reasons. But I think it's because many of us are so focused on food and the importance of food and where it comes from and how important it is to be thankful. And so frustrating to know how many people today are suffering from poor health because they're not being mindful about their food and what it is they're eating and what it is they're putting in their bodies. And if they were grateful for where it came from and thought about where it came from and what was in it and whether it was real or not. And these prayers, these blessings talk about real food. They're not talking about manufactured food.
True. And,
that's what we're thankful for, the real food.
Karen, if I just may say one other thing. In the back of the book, I have Blessed This Food, the short title, in 19 languages.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun because, for example, in Latin, which I do not speak, Benedictum hunc sibum is Blessed This Food. And in Spanish, Bendita se esta comida. And in French, Beni se repas.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, you know, if you can memorize three words in a different language, you can be a hero at the table.
That's a lovely thing. And not just say hello, goodbye, and where are the toilets, but you can say,
exactly.
Bless this food. I really like that. So I just wanted to talk a little bit more about you, just because going to your website, adrianarts.com, I see that this isn't food related, but it's lovely, and I thought worth mentioning. So you do sculpture.
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I love music. I'm a singer, and certainly appreciate it, all things musical, and see these beautiful sculptures you've done in the shape of a piano.
Right, I did those a number of years ago, and I sell maybe three or four. Sculptures 36 inches in marble or granite, a custom order. And adrianarts.com has my activities, and I'm actually going to New York in about a month. I have a 6-foot piano sculpture at Steinway, and we're going to decide what we're going to do with it. probably donate it to Lincoln Center or something, you know, something big. But it's very interesting, and pianists like Billy Joel and some others had my sculpture. So the piano is something I was raised with. We had two in the house. We had a concert grand and an upright. But one of the things about ideas and creativity and artistry, which you know well, is your mind is input with images and important things to you mostly, but you can't process that until years and years. So this is something that was in my psyche as a child, the piano, and eventually I did a sculpture of it, and the sculptures are copyrighted.
Well, I'm looking at some of the pictures, and there's something really lovely about the shape of a piano in ways that I've never thought of before.
Right.
It's somewhat heart-shaped.
Well, it has that very seductive curve that if the piano's up, the left side is straight and the right side is very lyrical. It echoes everything that's divine in the world.
I like it a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, so anything else we can talk about in Bless This Food before I let you go?
Well, I think you've covered the subject very nicely. I wanted to thank you very much. And I've been to your website and seen the good work that you're doing. And I support you with the benefits of the plant-based diet. And I've got quite a few food blessings that cover your domain. And I'm particularly proud of the fact that I get a lot of mail about children being able to read at the table of the book, including the classic hand-printed thank you, Mr. Butash, you know, with the letters going different ways.
from
children that the parents have used the book to force the child or to suggest to the child that they write the author, which is something I never did till I was an adult, you know, write an author.
Mm-hmm. And many people still don't do that to this day, but it's a lovely thing, and you probably like receiving mail.
Well, of course. It's always a surprise to see the envelope return address with a name you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what is this? And somebody saying lovely things. Who doesn't like that?
Yeah. Well, also, particularly if it's handwritten. You know, everything today is so mechanized and printed.
Yes.
And we can throw the trash mail away just by looking at how the envelope is formed. But there's nothing like handwriting and talking one-on-one, human to human. It's something lovely that this book has shown me and given me great, great satisfaction with.
Yes, so I recommend everyone to get to their table more often. First, line your kitchen, make some lovely food, invite some wonderful people, and sit down at the table. Put your smartphones away. No texting of your prayers. Look at each other. Hold everyone's hands and really think about where your food is coming from. It just may change everything for the better.
Well, let me close on again, Father Giuliani. Bless our hearts to hear in the breaking of bread the song of the universe. That is such a beautiful blessing. And again, I believe Father Giuliani is in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So a lot of my prayers are thousands of years old. The good old Father Giuliani did a very lovely prayer that's likening bread to the song of the universe. Exquisite poetry.
Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food, Adrian. And let's bless all of our food and get this message out there. It's so important.
Thank you, Ms. Hartglass. I love your program and your interview. Thank you.
All the best.
Bye.
All right. It's time for a little break. So let's bless this program, shall we, as we're talking about food, and be grateful for all the things that we can take the time and learn about so that we can all make a positive difference on this planet. Why not? So we're going to come back in a moment and talk to me, Tracy McCormick. She's got a very compelling story about how she healed herself from Crohn's disease with My Kitchen Cure. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back. Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And what are you thinking about? How are you at this very moment? Good. That's good. You can always send me an email at info@realmeals.org. We can have an online email conversation. Ask your questions. Make your comments. Tell me what you think. Tell me how you're feeling. What's new? What's old? What you're grateful for? And something about food. I would love to hear from you. And, of course, we were talking about my website on the last part of the program. I have a nonprofit. It's called Responsible Eating and Living. ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com is the website, and we're doing lots of fun things up there with food. Okay, so let's move on, and my next guest is me, Tracy McCormick. She's a real food and autoimmune cooking expert, a community food advocate, and the author of My Kitchen Cure, How I Cooked My Way Out of Chronic Autoimmune Disease and Prevented Cancer with Whole Foods and Healing Recipes. That is one great mouthful, and we're going to be hearing a lot more about that in the next half hour. Welcome to It's All About Food, Tracy McCormick.
Thank you for having me. How are you today?
You're welcome. Now, I want to know more about your first name, Me.
Me. My name is Me. When I was a little girl, my name is actually Megan, and my mother would introduce me to people, and she'd say, "This is Megan," and people would say, "Hi, Megan."
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, "It's not Megan." And so Me stuck, and then that's it. It just stuck. It became my nickname, and then it has followed me everywhere. And still today, I'll explain it to people, and then they'll say, "Oh, okay, Megan." And
no.
Okay, you didn't hear me. It's like saying your name is Chrissy and people call you Christy. You know, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, it's funny because I was just asking my last guest how to pronounce his last name, and I try to be sensitive about it because we identify with the sound of our name, and when it's not pronounced correctly or written correctly, my name's Karen with a C, and how often do I see it written with a K? I'm all about paying attention and being mindful. So I was just kind of interested because I'd never seen that name before. Me.
Yeah, and then I guess it had a lot of, I didn't know, but, you know, it would be There were times where I didn't like that nickname, but it just sort of stuck around, and and I guess it has relevance, you know?
It works. It works in this book.
Yeah, it works. It's about being authentic, that's for sure.
Okay, so you have a very, very compelling story, and I want to touch on some of that in the next half hour, kind of whet people's appetite, because they should know about it and read about it and learn from it. We're in a very bizarre situation right now in the United States with health care or disease care or whatever you want to call it, and shall we get it funded or not, and those who have it and don't. And there were interesting parts in your story about the medical profession, some of it good, some of it not so good. But one of my messages on this program that we can talk about is how we take responsibility for our own health and what we can do to do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's really what my story's about. You know, we can point our fingers at the medical community and doctors and nurses and get upset with them when they don't fix us. But it's not really, you know, we have what I think has happened is that we have created, we've turned our doctors into gods. And we go to them and we expect them to, there's a lot of expectation on them, and we expect them to fix us. And now they've become so accustomed with our expectation and our image of them being gods that they can only see one way of us fixing ourselves, and that's through them. And recently I had someone asked to review the book, and they were a little snarky, and they said, how can a woman who's not a doctor, not a nutritionist, not a scientist, find a cure in her kitchen for a disease that scientists can't? Like, how is that possible? And that statement is the problem in our society. We are told that unless we are uber-educated, that we're professional chefs or nutritionists or doctors or scientists, that we cannot do anything for our wellness, that we can't participate in our wellness because we're not educated enough or we don't have the wealth for it. And that statement that man made is exactly the problem. And so what's happening is, you know, as we take our power back, our personal power back, and we can do it via the kitchen, we're shifting our total relationship with our lives. And it's not just with our food and our health, but it's with the world that we're living in, the community that we live in, the way that we parent, and the way that we interact as a society.
I can understand to some degree how we got here. I talk about it all the time. We're all very busy and involved in our jobs and our family and surviving, and convenience is a very attractive thing, and we're made to believe things are convenient that may or may not be convenient, but we're convinced they are, and we are attracted to it, and that means unhealthy food, fast food, restaurant food, food that we think is food that isn't food, and then we get sick.
Yeah, and we pay the price of time either now or later, because either we pay the price of taking our time, slowing down, cooking real food, planning out meals, budgeting our checkbooks, organizing our lives, or we pay the price of time later when our time is cut short, or our time is lost to suffering and pain and discomfort and chronic dis-ease. So the time conversation and convenience, you know, it's sort of like you may be okay right now, but it's going to catch up to you, you know. And I used to think, well, maybe you'll get sick. Well, now it's not maybe someone is going to get sick. It's when. It's not an if, it's when. And that's, you know, and it's changeable. Chronic disease doesn't have to exist.
You know, that's interesting. A lot of people are thinking that themselves, that they will get sick at some point.
They will.
It's just accepted, and that's so wrong.
It's crazy, right? And it's a doomsday thing. I mean, as I just agreed all calmly, yeah, they will. But and it's a doomsday situation that is preventable, but, you know, it takes a lot of personal responsibility. It takes a lot of commitment to owning your entire life. And it's not just, you know, the pill that we want from the doctor. We want everything done easy. We want everything cheap. And it's just the phase that our society has been in, and I really believe we're coming through it.
Okay, let's talk about chronic diseases. Now, we've got a long way to go in terms of people getting this message, but I personally think in terms of heart disease and diabetes, still we have a long way to go, but more people are speaking out about the power of nutrition in order to prevent and reverse these things, and more people are getting it. Autoimmune diseases are like next, and they're getting more press these days. We're starting to understand a little bit that so many different symptoms are related to autoimmune diseases, and the mysterious bacteria, good bacteria, bad bacteria, sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's a whole new bag of worms. And Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, are in there, and you've had experience with this, and I know other people who have had success in turning it around. It's not information that's out there enough.
No, well, first of all, it's autoimmune disease. There are 75 million people with autoimmune disease. There are more than 100 autoimmune diseases, and once you have one autoimmune disease, you're susceptible to 100, to acquiring up to 100 of them. Those 100 diseases are everything from type 2 diabetes is autoimmune, lupus is autoimmune, multiple sclerosis, thyroid disease, Crohn's disease, celiac, psoriasis, vitiligo, rheumatoid arthritis. Those are all umbrellaed under the autoimmune disease blanket. And so once you have one of them, you can have many of them. And so what it's really about isn't just, you know, there's a cure for one of these diseases. It's really about bringing the body back into balance. And there are a lot of doctors right now that are starting to look at it, and they understand that there are some links to the autoimmune diseases. It's environmental exposure. So depending on where you were raised, where you live, where you work, where you spent a chunk of your time, and what was around you environmentally, chemical-wise. The other, it's like a perfect storm that happens with people. And so that will influence the type of autoimmune disease you get. Then your body's constitution, the body that you inherited. So in my family, I inherited a weak link in the intestines.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what was I exposed to? That was another pinhole in my immune system. What bacteria and viruses was I exposed to? That's another big pinhole. And so Crohn's and colitis and celiac disease, which is the allergy to wheat, and when people have celiac disease, by the time they find out that they've had it, they've done a lot of damage to the lining of their intestines.
Yep.
And it, so people stop eating gluten. Well, what happens when you stop eating gluten? That doesn't heal you. That stops, you know, the damage from continuing. But then you have to rebuild that lining of the intestines, and you have to bring the body back into balance because now you have an autoimmune disease. And you have to look at preventing other autoimmune diseases and keeping the immune system in balance. And how we do that is in the small intestines, because the small intestines is where the root of our immune system is. Our intestines are the root of our body's tree. That's our root. And like a tree planted in the earth, if the roots get sick, then down goes the tree. Well, that's the same thing for us. So in balancing the healthy bacteria, unhealthy bacteria, like you just said, keeping a balance there, supporting the body with a rotational diet, making sure the lining of the intestines are healthy and well, nothing is leaking, nothing is seeping, and that the villi are completely cleaned off and strong so that they can receive the nutrition from our food. That's where our immune system is. Those villi in the small intestine grab the nutrition. And when they're not supported because they're mowed down by too much wheat, too much dry, crunchy food, covered in mucus from excess dairy, and then the bacteria level is out of balance in the small intestines, so you have the unhealthy bacteria, and so you eat a diet high in sugars and fats and hard-to-digest foods, then you have a major weak link. So then that perfect storm comes together. What were you exposed to? What bacteria and viruses, and what environment do you live in, and what is your stress? Because when our stress is elevated, it throws the gut flora off and causes gut inflammation. So it's key. And so all that Crohn's and colitis are is an imbalance of bacteria. You get a really unhealthy dose of harmful bacteria a couple times, and then once you have it a couple times, you have some super bugs in the gut, and they gnaw at the lining of the intestines. And in my case, I didn't know, and I just kept eating a food rut diet. I loved processed food. I grew up in a food desert. I grew up on food stamps. I didn't know any better. And then when I made my way out of the food desert, went into the world, went to school, got a job, had enough money to buy food, I bought the food that I craved, the food that I lived on as a kid, mm-hmm. processed chemical foods. And with autoimmune disease, the immune system is in overdrive. So it's trying to fight all the things that the immune system is exposed to every single day. 100 years ago, we went to sleep at night. We didn't sleep on flame-retardant beds. Mm-hmm. We didn't sleep on carpeting with chemicals. We didn't have paint thinner, all you know, paint and all the varnishes. And we didn't sleep with our cell phones and our laptops on our bed. And we went to sleep, and our immune systems rested. And then in the morning, we ate a rotational diet because we had to eat seasonally. And we supported our bodies with real food. Well, now we don't eat much real food, and we eat lots of foods with additives and preservatives. Well, that sends the immune system into hyper alert, and it goes, "Woo, woo! What is that?" And so, are these warrior cells that are meant to work a very small percentage of the time are working 24 hours a day, 365 days, you know, a year, yeah. and they never rest. That's autoimmune disease.
Our bodies are pretty amazing at what they can do, and they are designed to eliminate toxins. We're just overburdening mm-hmm. them beyond mm-hmm. what their capabilities are.
Absolutely, and we're not supporting them in any way. We do not support our bodies. And in fact, the only way that we think we're supporting our bodies is extreme exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So we do extreme exercise. We work out 2-3 hours a day. We go to the gym, and then we think that we're going to be okay. But what's happening is, so maybe we're okay on the outside, but we're not supporting the major muscle, which is the intestines. No one is working out for their intestines, very few people. And so it's a, you know, and we also eat. We work out so we can eat, as opposed to
mm-hmm.
eating so you're
yeah.
well enough to
if
work
I work out.
Out
a little longer, then I can have that piece of cake.
Yeah, so we view real food and healthy food as punishment because we're like, oh, I ate cake yesterday and French fries. I better eat this today. And so we have a really warped relationship with eating supportive foods because we view them as punishment.
Yep.
Yeah.
And until you're on the other side, it's really hard to understand.
Until you go down and you watch somebody go down, and that's where we're at now. We've already hit the tipping point. You know, if 75 million people in this country have autoimmune disease, 2 out of 3 men are going to have cancer, or what is it? 2 out of 3 men, or 2 out of 3 men? It's absurd numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's
so
absurd.
If these numbers are so high, then that means everyone has someone who's not well. And children are growing up in a culture watching chronic disease. So when I was a little girl, my mother was very sick. She was the only one who was sick. I don't remember one person in my town being sick but her.
Hmm.
And now my girls, I mean, I sit with moms at the dance studio or at the park, and there'll be 4 women, 3 of them, including me in that 4, have something.
Yep. And they think it's normal.
And now it's becoming normal. And, you know, I was thinking that today, too. We're just kind of like you said about cancer. Oh, well, we're going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Your story is very compelling, and it's fun to read. Mm-hmm. There's romance involved and all kinds of different things that make a story good. But I'm thinking that your story is not unique and that many people are going through something similar, and that's the scary part of it
mm-hmm.
because most people don't find their kitchen.
Mm-mm.
And with Crohn's disease, with irritable bowel, most people are given cocktails of all of these pharmaceuticals that are going to do more damage than good.
They do. They really do more damage.
There's one part in the book I wanted to mention, and again, I want to say I'm very grateful for the medical community. They saved my life. I had advanced ovarian cancer, and I know that I wouldn't be here if it
That's
wasn't
right.
for the surgeons that did what they did. But at the same point, they also try to kill me. So
yeah.
You have to be so careful. And you talked about at one point you were living in Mexico. You came back to Los Angeles. You were on a mission to find out what was wrong with you. You went through a battery of tests. You told your doctors you weren't going to leave the hospital until you found out what you had. And then you got a second opinion. And after they sent a camera down your intestines and really didn't find a whole lot. Later on, this other doctor was at a conference and saw this slide and told you it was yours and everything was inflamed. And I'm thinking, how did the doctor miss it?
Yeah, I mean, I've never talked to that doctor since. I should give him my book.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank gosh I went and found a second opinion. And Dr. Leo is an amazing doctor. And the reason he's such an amazing doctor is he listened to me. And he didn't jump to conclusions and ideas and throw things at me. He really listened to me. He really supported me. And he was looking to see what was wrong with me. He was determined. And he did. He found a giant hole mm-hmm. in my intestines. And had he not found it, I don't know what would have happened. I mean, my intestines probably would have ruptured, because when you have an ulceration, the total circumference like I did, as large as I did, it was like a rubber band ready to break, and or a thin thread. And changing my life and changing my plate and changing my fate it's been the greatest blessing ever. And yes, there are millions of me's out there. And when I wrote this book, I wrote it because I kept hearing this voice that said, you got to tell them. There's a million me's. There's a million me's. And, you know, I wasn't able to help my mother. My mother had Crohn's disease, and she had a horrific experience with it in the 80s, and she died at 39 years old.
Wow.
And I watched her as a little girl. I stood in the corner, and I watched her bleed to death.
Mm.
And when I got sick, I thought, I'm not going out like that. And what changed it was my daughter was 5 years old, and she was looking at me, and I couldn't get off the floor. I mean, I couldn't stand up. And I thought, oh no, I saw myself in her. And I thought, I've got to find another way. And I'm so glad that I did, because, you know, I don't know how long I'll be well for. I don't know how long we have to live on this earth. But I know that in the last 5 years, I've really done something grand as a parent. The thing I'm most proud of is taking responsibility for my health and done my best to work towards my own wellness. And my children have seen that. And I don't think I could have taught them a better lesson.
Excuse me. You mentioned something that I think is really important, and that is this voice in your head. And we need to listen to ourselves, because there's so much that we know intuitively that we need to believe in.
Yeah.
And
we have to listen to ourselves. We
absolutely
have got feelings. People can call it God. They can call it whatever they want. I'm comfortable with all of it. Put it all on the table. Name it what you want.
You don't want to be intimidated by a doctor.
Never.
And if your doctor is intimidating you, you need to find another one. You need to be with a team of people that you trust, that you know are on your side, that you resonate with.
You really do. And the last doctor that I saw was great, you know. I said to him, look, I'm doing the food. I'm feeling so much better. I'm seeing a Chinese doctor. I do acupuncture. I just did it today. I still do it. I'll do it forever. And I said, and he really wanted to do a final procedure that was super dangerous, and he wanted to give me drugs. And I said, I think I'm going to do this food for a full year, and if it doesn't work, then I'll know it didn't work, and I'll be back. And he said, here's my card, and if you need me, come see me. And I said, thank you so much, and I hope I never see you again. And I've never seen him again. And he was great, because he didn't intimidate me. He heard me out, and I moved forward. And, you know, I think it's so important to find a doctor that can hear you, that can support you, and can hear you. You can find your voice, and you work with them. And, you know, if I ever get super sick and I can't get up off the floor, then of course I'll go to the hospital, and of course I'll, with, you know, grace and gratitude, receive whatever medical care I need. But as long as it's preventable and I can do my part, I'm doing my part.
What the medical community is really good at these days is diagnostic testing.
And amazing.
Some of it we do a little too much of, but...
Yeah, well,
it's good to find out what's going on inside. Use whatever eyes that are out there, MRI and CAT scans and all kinds of different tools, colonoscopies. If you have a problem, you need to find out where it is, and then you can decide what to do about it.
Yeah,
but diagnostic tools are really, really powerful. Now, you've dealt with a lot of doctors and dietitians in your quest to get well, and some of them were not very respectful about your plan.
No, well, and lots of, no, they weren't at all. I mean, that's another thing. When you decide to change your life pattern and you say, I'm going to do this food protocol, I'm going to try it, be prepared, because eating real food is kind of bizarre to most people, and a lot of nutritionists and dietitians are not caught up into the modern thinking of food and food and how it works in the body. They're still thinking about calories and fat content. I don't think about calories ever. Never do I look at the calories, because everything I'm cooking doesn't come in a box that tells me about the calories. I don't think about fat content at all. I think about healthy oils versus hard-to-digest oils, because if it's hard to digest, then it's not absorbable, and it's going to block my absorption, and I'm not going to be at my greatest potential. So I look at healthy oils and no calorie, and I think all about nutrition. And, oh, yeah, man, I had to spank a few nutritionists. I was like, listen. And their whole thing was, well, why? I don't understand. How can you get the right amount of calories if you don't eat cheeseburgers? I was like, what? And I do eat burgers now, y'all. I make my own grass-fed burgers once in a blue moon. But it's like, are you serious? Because I'm eating a plant-based diet, I'm not. What? And so we're in the change. The tipping point already happened. And, you know, if you go to a nutritionist and she doesn't have a clue about sea vegetables and leafy greens and how they support the body, go find somebody else.
Well, another point that you mentioned, I don't think you came out that specific about it, but it was really clear in your descriptions of these people. If people you're going to for health information and guidance do not look healthy themselves.
Woo, shawty.
Run in the other direction.
Right, because you want to walk somebody who walks their talk. I mean, that was the whole deal. I hadn't been to a gastroenterologist's office where everybody in the office was bright and shiny and healthy and happy. And I kept thinking, what are they eating? And that was a sign that they didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a mega whoop whoop.
Really, really important. Yeah, and not obvious to most people, but yeah. You want to go to someone who walks the walk and looks healthy.
Yeah.
many ways. You want it not just in their weight, in their skin, in the clarity of their eyes, and also in their personality, because
absolutely.
I think unhealthy foods can make you an unpleasant person.
Oh, sure, and they shut down your expansive ability to be expansive. You know, you really want to find someone who's got an expansive point of view, and that's my food concept. I started out rigid macrobiotics. I was completely vegan for a long time. I just kept having to learn more and more and more, and I kept finding that there are so many different diets, and the red thread is the real food, and it's eating in rotation and in balance and being a mindful eater, and that's really that's the key component to wellness via food. And so for me, you know, there isn't just one way. There's many ways to get well, and when we start getting stuck and we think we have the way, look out. Because you're getting ready to trip. Because there's just not one way. There's many ways. And that has been the key to me remaining well, is expanding my point of view, hearing everyone's point of view, taking a look at it, and integrating what works for me, and shifting things around constantly, and changing my mind, you know, changing my mind. Right now, I have tofu recipes in my book. I'm not eating any tofu right now. So, but is tofu the evil devil? I don't think so.
Right.
But I also don't think, you know, I don't do dairy. Do I think dairy is the evil culprit and that's why we're sick? No, it's not one thing that's made us sick.
I do. I think dairy is evil.
Well, I don't eat it because I can't digest it and my kids don't eat it. And
yeah.
We have more cows than anybody I know, and nobody eats dairy on our farm.
Mm.
But that's a conversation. But to make dairy the villain will become a limited point of view. And you've got to look at a bigger picture, and you've got to look at your food excess and your food combination.
I agree. We all need to align on a lot of very key essential points, that we need to be eating whole, minimally processed food, mostly plants.
Mostly plants.
We have not scientifically proven what the ideal diet is at this point, but we do know that it should be primarily plants.
Yep.
I'm personally a vegan for ethical reasons and environmental and everything else. But if we all at least move to this place of primarily plants, then we could move further and get better at it.
I agree everything 100%. Absolutely. And, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, it's just, so I've kind of been moving into this world of food advocates and food conversations. And I think that, you know, we just have so much self-judgment about our food, about what we eat, what we serve our families, how we eat it. And we get really rigid in our points of view. And I just keep trying to expand. I keep trying to hear everything and learn as much as I can.
Now, you give classes and help people learn about how to prepare food, which is crazy amusing to me, because people don't know how to prepare food. They don't know where their kitchen is. They get all kinds of scary. And I laugh because I see this all the time in Manhattan, all these gorgeous kitchens with all the greatest stuff and never touched.
I live in Malibu. The kitchens are bigger than the house, and no one cooks.
No one cooks.
I do. I run community kitchens from Malibu all the way to the hood in Nashville, to Music Row in Nashville, into rural communities. And this year, we have intention to open 18 community kitchens across the country. And I teach people how to cook real food from scratch. Everybody comes in. We set up folding tables, butane burners. It's all plant-based. Chopping boards, cutting knives, aprons. I cook with upwards of 150 people for $1 a person. And we all break into stations, and we cook. And I have food angels that cook with me and lead each recipe. And then we sit down and we eat a meal that heals, you know. And it's just, and it's fascinating, because when I started out, I thought I only needed to go into food deserts. Well, again,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. I've been living part-time in Malibu, and I can't tell you, I almost feel like the wealthier the household, the harder it is, because you have options. It's really easy to go into a rural family in the Holler in Tennessee and say, this is what y'all got to eat, and they're down because they have a limited amount of money and they still have a relationship with farms. They still remember their grandmothers making black-eyed peas. And in urban cities, you have a lot of sort of know-it-all mentality. I'm already doing it, and it's a little more complicated.
Right. Well, thank you. Me, Tracy McCormick. Oh, My Kitchen Cure is a great book. Lots of wonderful information. You've really done your homework here, and I'm so glad that you're well.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for letting me share. And, you know, your platform is amazing, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thank you. You have a website?
Yes, metracy.com, and my book's on Amazon, My Kitchen Cure.
Okay, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food.
Fantastic day, girl.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this has been It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.